The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 261.
Yep, it's a fresh looks episode.
Yeah.
And it's a fresh looks episode looking at the Raspberry Pi server.
Yeah, Pi server.
Pi server.
So, and we're going to talk about Pi server and the different uses around it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
All right. So just the other day, there was a...
Gather around your laptops, right, everybody. We're going to have a story. No, I'm just kidding. No, go ahead, Tony.
On raspberrypi.org, their blog, they posted an article about the Pi server. And what I didn't realize, and I probably heard this a while back, but I forgot about it, is that you can now boot your Raspberry Pi 3 off the network. You don't have to have an SD card.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
I was pretty surprised when I saw that.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So you can have projects that...
So that's like a Pixie boot, right?
Exactly. It is. It's Pixie boot or boot P or whatever, mm-hmm, you know, similar things. But yeah, it's Pixie boot is the base of it. So this Pi server is was developed by the Raspberry Pi Foundation. And they, and what it is now is that you have a Raspberry, or you run an x86 server with, Raspbian Stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Not Raspbian, Debian Stretch.
Okay.
Just straight up Debian.
So just a regular box you got sitting out there. It doesn't have to be a powerful one. It's got to be a box. It's running, mm-hmm, Debian Stretch.
Right.
Okay.
And it has to have some sort of a file system on it. You know,
okay, so, sure.
And that's where all the files that all of your client Raspberry Pis are going to have is held. Their file systems will be held on this server.
Okay.
And it's, you network boot it, and you network boot the Raspberry Pi, it checks over to the Pi server, and then it boots up and does its thing.
Now, how does it know to do that? Is there something kind of hard-coded in the Pi, the client Pi itself, or is there...
No. The magic behind Pixie boot is DHCP.
Okay.
So what happens is, this happens with all DHCP, so PCs, phones, everything. When it boots up, it sends out a broadcast message to any server that's connected on the local network or whatever your network can be programmed to do to send on somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's saying, hey, I need an IP address and give me your whatever else DHCP is going to give me. There's a bunch of different info you can get from DHCP. And so typically your phone and your PC, all it gets is an IP address, a NetMask and gateway, DNS, and maybe a domain name and... a couple other things. So those are your basics. Then there's a lot more that can be added in with DHCP options. And one of those options is network boot, so Pixie boot stuff. So it's it redirects you over. It says, oh, do you want to boot from here? You know, go over to this TFTP server, pull down the image from there, and you can boot. And that's what this is based off of. And it's been around for a long time. You know, Pixie boot, mm-hmm, has been around for a long time.
Well, I remember seeing it, references to it, reading about it five years ago.
I'll make a fun,
even a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
But
Tony sent this the other day, and I haven't had time to try and install any of it. But one of the cool things you can do with pfSense, you can specify TFTP server based on MAC address. So we have a TFTP server for Pixie boot tools we use over the network, which we boot Linux over the network to test machines. Mm-hmm. But I can actually run the Raspberry Pis on the same network. I just take their MAC addresses, and you can specify which TFTP they get versus that. This is really cool.
Now, that'll do. Doing it that way is possible,
yeah,
but it's a lot more manual configuration, where if you do it through the Pi server tool,
yes,
then it goes through and sets up a lot more of it for you. Like, there's a lot more options, and it makes it easier. And that was one of the things I was messing around with my pfSense box, was just to set up another network with no DHCP server, because then when you run this Pi server,
it runs
the DHCP server, and then it gives off all of those options for you.
It might be a simple workaround. There's an option called Next DHCP Server. if you go into pfSense and just say these MAC addresses get the next DHCP server and you specify that, so they say, oh, you're not the DHCP server, and it may hand it off. I haven't used it before because we use ours as a DHCP, but it is one of the protocol options called next. So try this one next. So I'm not the one for you.
Yeah. I think more commonly it's considered DHCP relay. Well,
relaying is a little bit different than next. There's two spots. One's relaying DHCP, where you just forward everything as a relay, which is supported in pfSense. The other option is called next. I believe it's called next DHCP, because it was when you're setting up the fog tool, there's a way to do that. You specify the computers you want to be on the next DHCP server. I believe that's the right protocol. I haven't tested it. Tom could be wrong again.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see how that works, because the basis or the insecurity of DHCP is whoever answers first gives the information.
And it answers first and then hands off next.
Pi server is sitting inside the same network as that. So one might respond first to the other. So I would suggest just shutting off DHCP on your router and then let the Pi server run it.
Okay.
And
what if you subnet it?
Yes, what he's going to do is kind of create
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. And subnetting still is valid. You know, anybody can do this at home as easily. But really, it's simpler. You don't call it subnetting. You would call it more just putting another router inside your network.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Create a segmented network.
I do that at home. I have two routers. I got my AT&T one, and then I have my other one, and all my stuff goes off the second router.
Right, and you can get just a cheap Linksys, wired router for $10 on eBay or whatever, and it would easily run something like this. You just make sure you turn off DHCP, and then run everything else. Defaults on it and would be good.
I've never really thought about this. So apparently, there is not a BIOS per se, but a savable, flashable memory where you're setting this config essentially, right?
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
I'm neither.
Yeah. So what it is to set up the Pi itself to be able to boot off the network is you first have to boot from a SD card, and then you run a command or put in a file into the boot config. /boot/config.txt file, and when you reboot, it turns on Pixie boot or the network booting, and then you pull it, and then it says to pull that line back out, and then take the SD card out, and you're good to go. So then it'll start booting off a Pixie boot or a network booting, and then your Pi server.
Have you set this up at home?
I have not. Okay, but this, that would be my plan. Mm-hmm. And what's neat is you can run any OS, or not any Pi OS, and you can go through and choose per Raspberry Pi that connects in, which OS it gets and what file store, where its file system is going to be. So you can have many Raspberry Pi projects running inside your house, and it will just boot whatever you tell it to. And so you can have, Tom was just suggesting, a Pi project called Cayenne.
Yeah, Project Cayenne.
Yeah, so, and it's like an IoT thing.
That's a hot one.
It's pretty hot. If you have, and basically what it is, you connect up IoT sensors to your Pi, and it reports back the information, and then stuff happens, really cool stuff.
It's really slick.
With it related to this, what you would be able to do is, those sensors are related or are limited to the length of the little wire that you have it connected to, right? To the Pi. If you don't want to run wire all over your house, right?
But okay. Yeah.
Well, what you would be able to do is say you have one Raspberry Pi in a garage to run sensors in the garage. You have another Raspberry Pi, in your kitchen to run sensors in the kitchen, and one in your utility room. Well, what you'd be able to do is use this Pi server to go through and have all the file systems held on the Pi server, and they all check into the Pi server to boot up and run.
Well, another scalable, the Project Cayenne has some demo projects, and this is very related. So if you built it on top of this, I'm thinking of some of my industrial clients who would be very interested in this.
Oh, yeah.
they because they have large manufacturing plants. And this is really an interesting. I actually didn't know I started something. I showed how Raspberry Pi works to one of my clients. They end up building a control module, and it repurposes 30-year-old CNC machines to be modern day.
Oh, that's awesome.
They actually turned it into a selling product that they sell the device to reattach to a serial interface on old CNC machines to breathe new life into them. Nice. And it was started with a, did you know you can connect a Raspberry Pi? And he says, you can? That's interesting. Hmm. And he took it, and I'd seen him like a while later. He never even told me he was doing this because he just didn't think I'd be interested. I'm like, I want to do an interview with you. What do you mean interested?
That's cool.
And he built a really cool project out of it. And it's the same concept. So you could repurpose all these old devices. Or he started with, I just want to watch the devices because we put a machine, it's got a machine apart, and it takes 2 hours to machine. And there's 20 machines machining apart at different intervals. And we see something babysit and watch the machine, and if it goes too far or this little switch trip this switch and let the Raspberry Pi let us know. Hmm. And these CNC machines are like $20,000 a piece, so yeah. Spending $35 on a Pi for each one, really minor upgrade.
Very.
Yeah, and be able to orchestrate
the cheap
these
CNC
with this.
Machines.
Yeah, those are the, well, they're old. That's, oh, yeah. So they are old and they're more manual. The new ones are over 100-something thousand mm-hmm. and are very automated. And they can't afford those. So they automated the old ones because they all ran on DOS and there's no more updates for it.
Right.
Do you think with improvements to processor technology that those older CNC machines are now more accurate with the Pi inside of them?
Probably. They've added more sensors to them. It's really, I mean, they were always able to machine to incredible tolerances. It was just getting that data to them was a challenge. They used mm-hmm. to have all these conversions and they were still using floppy disks. They had newer computers copying mm-hmm. data to floppies on USB floppy drives to get the data into these really old machines. They had all kinds of steps that were real painful. Now that they've automated some of it, they've made programming options on just put it into a Pi.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I lost disk 99 again.
Yes. Yeah.
Or you can go through and pull out the old hardware that's failing.
Yes.
You know, like the DOS machine that has to connect over the long haul serial connection out to the where the CNC machine is. And
oh, their network is they have a muxer. I don't know if you've ever seen those. You know what I'm talking about? They have a serial mux system. They have serial cables run to all their CNC machines that was mm-hmm. done in the late 80s, early 90s. Still works. Those wow. muxers, like, they, yeah, there's a lot of slime on it. Yeah. I've had to touch the box and move stuff. Water soluble oil creates slime, if you didn't know. It's dirty yeah. there.
Anyway, so on, yeah. on that same yeah. idea of running Raspberry Pis out there in industrial, mm-hmm. if one of those dies, you just go in and update the MAC address on your Pi server,
yep.
and it boots right up to what it was doing before. So it's a really easy to recover.
It's also
system.
Easy when to scalably update all of them. Just reboot them, and they'll have the latest version on there. Because it'll pull the new image again, and now they've all been updated to the latest iteration of your tool.
Yeah.
Yep. This is really cool.
And then you can do LDAP authentication. So you set up a few users inside the Pi server, and then you can go through. So say this would be more applicable to a classroom or a library kind of setting. Is you set up your set of users, and then you can go to any of the Pis and sit down and log in with that username and password, and they'll all authenticate back to the Pi server for you.
This might be fun for the upcoming PenguinCon because they're always looking at inexpensive ways to do labs, and you can run essentially a desktop on these, and this is an easy way to reset mm-hmm. the lab.
Absolutely. Same for school classrooms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at some code from this project and also a picture here. So what stops a person from just plugging in a Raspberry Pi, some malicious person? Well, you can do MAC address filtering through the Pi server itself. It's got a nice little checkmark box. You can say, all of these Pis I know about, and here we go.
And deploy.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, and then so if you don't know about it, then it doesn't get the image, and then it doesn't
yep. This is really cool.
Get in, yeah.
This is an advanced project.
They made, from the looks of it, this looks super simple to use.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I was thinking that, too. I was thinking, oh, I should just go buy some of these and try it. And then I realized, oh, I got to add that to my list of 50 projects.
I feel the same way. I'm like, the good news is I have Pis. I got two of them.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I don't have any. Well, no, I have one, but my friend Ruth is using it. Mm. I got to check with her and see what she's doing.
So
maybe she's doing one of these.
What's interesting is I was scrolling through, reading the article, and then at the end there's comments. You know, one of the comments is, you know, what is this project different than the PiNet? project. Have you heard of PyNet?
Right now, I just heard.
No.
Yeah. So PyNet.
Why don't you share with us?
Yeah.
PyNet is really geared toward education and creating like computer labs. And what PyNet does is it's the same thing: network booting, Raspberry Pis.
Mm-hmm.
The project is actually like 2 years old, so it's been around for a bit longer. But what it builds, it's based off of the LTSP project, or Linux Terminal Server project.
Boy, that project's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and you know, there's a guy local that built
it. Jim Quillen.
Jim Quillen. Yeah, yeah, he's the president of one of the logs, MUG, the Michigan Users Group.
I first met them in 1999 at the Toledo Linux Fest, which I
Toledo.
There was one in Toledo.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, it was run by what, University of Toledo, or
I think so. Yeah. My gray hairs are showing now, man, as I was there. 99 or 2000. It was. Mm-hmm. It's been about 18 years now. So
wow.
Yeah. So he's not active. He doesn't run the project anymore, but it's really cool. It's run off of that, and I have messed with that project years ago, probably 10 years ago, with Ubuntu. And Edubuntu was a spin, and I'm not sure if it's still active or not, but Edubuntu was based off of LTSP, and it was the same thing with old PCs, that you have one server running, and you can network boot all these PCs, and it would boot up to a desktop. And there was a lot of cool tools that you could take over desktops and to be able to present it to everybody and things like that. So it was great for education and that kind of stuff. So there's PyNet. The biggest
really cool
difference between the two I see is that PyNet is really geared toward classroom stuff, where PyServer is still network boot. You can tell it what image to boot from, but you can tell it just a base image and then build something off of that. So you could do a lot more customizing that if you need. It's not just a classroom or lab kind of setup.
This can get really interesting. After you pixie boot the image, you could then have configuration management run and configure anything else that you needed.
Right. Yeah, have something like Ansible or something.
Yeah, exactly. I can count the amount of times that I've plugged in an SD card to a Pi and then gone, it's dead. And then had to go to the store, and then it completely throws off the flow of your project.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now with this.
Mary's actually run into that too. You get the red flash of death or whatever that Raspberry Pi does, and it's because the SD card's bad or corrupt or something.
Well, and you have the inherent problem of read-write swap files on SD cards causing wear leveling. They're made for a lot of read and writes, but not the expectation of file system read and writes, which are pretty intensive. You've now offloaded the file system read and write, so you actually make a more survivable device.
Mm-hmm.
Just to bring up Edubuntu, I looked it up because it's been a moment since I've heard that. They've skipped the 16.04 release, so they're still on 14.04. Mm. They're going to support it until long-term support ends in 2019. But after that, if no one steps up, I believe that project is going to be dead.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's been 14.04, so it's been 3 years since the major release, but anyway, so I can see a lot of really cool things you'll be able to do with PyServer. You know, I mean, like we're talking, you know, the IoT stuff or industrial stuff, or just it would actually be really cool to do clustering and have it all build a cluster and have, again, all the file system is held off onto this other server, and then you could pair that file system with an NFS or iSCSI or something connection over to a FreeNAS. So then it's backed up on your FreeNAS with ZFS. And
we actually, because we're running one of the open source projects for deployment tools called Clone Deploy, and it runs on ZFS and FreeNAS as it runs that on the system. And that's how we do images of all these computers. Matter of fact, I may fix Mary's hard drive with that same tool.
Hey. That'd be pretty cool. And just think, we'd be able to talk about it as what we did.
Yeah. It's an open source cloning tool, and it does clone both Windows and Linux.
Awesome.
Over PXE.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it relates to this.
Yeah, that's cool. So I'm trying to think of what else is there to talk
so
about this.
So here's where this gets even more fun, because I have a virtualization server at home, and I'm going to actually test this, because I have my worries, because it's so extensive, my Pi emulator that I have, which is runs the what is that called?
Maybe.
RetroPie.
Yes.
The RetroPie system. That's what I use my Raspberry Pi for, because I have a thing for retro games. But I do worry, because you customize or you get so far in Zelda, and, you know, there's a lot of save files in there. I'm worried I'm going to wear out my SD card. So I may convert my RetroPie image to an image on here, and I feel more confident, and I can just boot it up whenever I want.
Inside the comments, there's a comment that says there's no console version of Pi server, but... a guy does have a couple of steps to run it headless, and
really?
Then you can X11 forward through SSH to configure setting it up from your laptop.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, and that's how I'd run it if I would run it headless. And
how good does X11 forward in working? I actually have never tried it.
It works every time I've needed it.
Okay.
To.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done it on the internal network, and
yeah.
I've never done it across the internet, but. So one other thing that you do is it's not just straight Debian and then their tool. So if you install Debian Stretch, and then you install the Raspberry Pi desktop, which is actually pretty neat, lightweight desktop. But that desktop has the Pi server tool that you need. And what was that? There was one more thing I was going to say. Oh, so it says, and then to add software, you can have it look for a script, and they said as the project builds, then they'll have more programs that you could just throw in the script, you know, pre-built for you.
But you can use some of your probably existing images, like my RetroPie image. So
yeah, yep, and it's not read-only images, so you could have one Pi boot up, and then you log into that, and you set up, and you install stuff, and just like you would a regular Raspberry Pi.
And then you can write that back, and then clone an image. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I can actually put a Raspberry Pi in each of my TVs, and then shut down one, save it to the other, push it over, and my save game for Zelda will be there. This is the future. I mean, these are the things that really matter when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
Which I need to do that again is I usually beat Zelda every year. That's my on the old Nintendo, because that's my relaxation. I can't progress to new games apparently.
So cool, yeah. And so
I really like this.
Yeah, there's a lot of commercial uses. You know, like I said, labs. You could do
libraries.
Yeah, libraries, internet kiosks, TV. Systems, you know.
Deploy a bunch of Raspberry Pi crypto miners, which are super inefficient.
Exactly.
I don't know if I mentioned this, but Opera Browser has incorporated in its latest version some anti-crypto mining features.
Yes.
Mm. So, anyway, okay, back to the Pi.
Yeah. You know, you guys have talked about the, was it the soccer stadium that's in Detroit?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there is no soccer stadium. Oh, you're talking about
Detroit City FC?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're talking about Keyworth.
Keyworth Stadium.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so Tom had worked there. You set up like their
Wi-Fi,
right?
Outdoor Wi-Fi and stuff, yeah.
You know, Mary's been there. And,
yep, I have.
It makes me think that they have TVs all around the place, so they can run, you know, advertisements or the game or whatever. You could run Raspberry Pis in the back end of that and then control it all from a Pi server like this.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be really neat.
There's actually a project called Pi Signage. We have a proposal in for a client. It's really cool because you can change signage based on Raspberry Pis that are distributed everywhere. You upload to a central server. They constantly are querying that server for new files. It's just a really cool project I want to do a review on. We've tested it here, plugged a Raspberry Pi in, and anywhere, like from a graphics company, you can push out updates to a central server. The Pis just keep querying that server and go, hey, look, there's a new graphic to display. It's going to be for safety for a large industrial company that's held all their safety notices, and everything's going to go out across their facilities across the U.S.
Nice.
That's awesome.
It's a really cool project because one central office or whoever can just push an update, and it's all secure. It's all done through SSL. I believe it uses Let's Encrypt certificates too. is one of the ways you just got to have an SSL server, but you can use it for that too.
So yeah, that always makes me feel good.
Yeah. So now that we got a whole relationship over here. We'll
yeah. And like I said, the coolest thing about these is that because there's no SD card on it, then you can just, if it dies, you just send out a replacement. So if it's across the country or something, you just ship one over to them. They plug it in.
I like that because that's my concern is, and we've talked about the Pi of Death here, it is often the SD card. Rarely have I ever seen a Raspberry Pi ever go bad, but SD cards just, the read-write file system is not keen to an SD card. SSDs are designed differently to handle lots of read-writes. SSD cards are like used for putting in cameras and having limited amounts of read-writes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is definitely
it's more the write than the read that does it.
Right? Yes, yeah. Because to write to an SD card, you got to break the electrical membrane to push the data into it. Versus reading it, you just go over and pull the data back out. So each time it does that, you create a wear level. So
very cool. All right. So without just filling more space of random talking, then I guess we can end.
Yes, we can. But I've had so much coffee, I can randomly talk now. I'm excited about this. We'll leave the links in the show notes to the Pi server and also to the Pi EDU. That is the
PiNet.
PiNet, which is the PiNet.org.uk. That's a cool project, too. It's directly related to this, but more focused on schools. So if you are someone in a school wanting to spread the Raspberry Pi love around, that's a good project.
Yeah.
We were supposed to come up with Raspberry Pi puns, and we did not.
Yeah, we did. The CD.
Not enough.
Cayenne and
oh, yeah, yeah.
Hot
yeah,
and
spicy
yeah.
pies.
Yeah,
spicy, cayenne.
Yeah. That's right.
Maybe there's not enough of them, but it was so
good. Well, the only thing I was wondering is, you know, with that SD card, whether you have to slice it or not.
Oh, there we go.
For partitions? Yeah, I get it.
And?
it was weak. Admittedly, it was weak.
And related to our previous episode, there's no meltdown of the Pi. The Pi won't melt down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
All right.
All right.
Great. Well, so that was interesting. Thanks, Tony, for coming to talk about that talk. Thanks for visiting us, Tony, to talk about that topic.
And teaching Tom something completely new, because I had no idea you could network PXC boot a Raspberry Pi.
No idea at all.
All right, so I guess we're coming to the end. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 263.
Raspberry Pi Server.
And this is Tony.
Pi Server.
Pi Server, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, that was one more thing I wanted to say. Right, so I guess if you Google Pi Server, then you'll find a really old Indiegogo for a Pi Server. But that's like a hardware enclosure. It's not this project that we're talking about.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So
this is a different way to serve your Pi.
Yeah. Exactly. So the article that I'm referencing, we'll have the link in the show notes. Yeah, but it's blogs, raspberrypi.org/blog/PiServer. It's just PI server. And it was published 3 days ago from now. So that was, on the 4th?
Yep.
January 4th. So check that out.
Cool.
Awesome. All right, now we can actually end the show.
All right. Yeah. So this was Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich,
Phil Parada,
and Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can...
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.